Hello, and welcome to Broconomics. Now, I thought that it might be good to have a quick look at Joe Biden's budget to basically see if we can come away being fans of it or not. So, you take your view on where we're going to end up on that one. But look, he's proposing a $7.3 trillion budget, of which about $1.8 trillion a year is going to be just made up. It's going to be deficit. It's going to be borrowed. And that's where we are now. Given some of the things I'll be telling you during this episode, you might imagine that that deficit number is going to increase a good chunk from here. He's actually increasing the budget by 18%, which is bold, considering that he's well in excess of his tax revenues at this base. But nevertheless, you know, the man's president. Let's see what he's putting forward. So we start with his Reuters article here. Biden's $7.3 trillion budget is a campaign pitch for spending and tax goals. So they basically say that, US President Joe Biden sketched out his policy vision for a potential second four-year term on Monday, unveiling $7.3 trillion election year budget aimed at convincing skeptical Americans that he can run the economy better than Donald Trump. Well, obviously can't, but that's his claim. Biden wants to raise taxes by trillions on corporations and high earners. His budget wishlist showed to help cut the deficit and pay for new programs assisting those who make less, cope with high housing and childcare costs. Now, well, I won't spoil it, but anyway, that is complete fantasy. None of that is going to take place. Biden's budget for 2025 fiscal year, which starts this October, includes raising the corporate income tax rate to 28% from 21%. Wow. Forcing those with a wealth over $100 million to pay at least 25% of their income in taxes and letting the government negotiate to bring more drug costs down. Meanwhile, government would bring back child tax credits for low and middle income earners, fund childcare programs, funnel $258 billion into building homes, provide 12 weeks of paid family leave for workers, and spend billions on law enforcement. So all of those spending commitments will definitely take place. The bit about raising the taxes, that's not going to happen. Because you can raise the tax rate on corporations, and they haven't really got anywhere to go, but they will just offshore as much of the operation as they possibly can, find more creative ways around it. It will just lead to less being done in the US than would otherwise be done. All the spending commitments will take place, and the taxes on the wealthy, well, we cover that in more detail a little bit further on, but basically you're asking the people who are the most able to leave and make other lifestyle choices. Because, of course, if you are wealthy, one of the things you can purchase with your wealth is more time off, more time with the family, more time vacationing, that kind of thing. So you basically get this trade-off where wealthier people will simply choose to do something else with their time other than earning highest amounts. And of course, if you're wealthy in a stock of wealth, doesn't necessarily mean that your flow of wealth, your earnings, are necessarily that high. In fact, you could be earnings rich and capital poor, or you could be capital rich and earnings poor. So there's a number of ways this can split out. So, you know, it might not actually have a huge impact on people who have very high earnings, but spend it and don't accumulate a lot of assets, or at least not a lot of assets within the reach of the IRS. Final quote from this. Do you really think the wealthy and big corporations need another 2 trillion tax breaks? Because that's what he, Trump, wants to do, Biden said of Trump at the event. And I'm going to keep fighting like hell to make sure it's fair. Okay, right, first. Okay, first of all, let's just consider the scale of some of these numbers, because it is easy to lose track of just how much money we're talking about. We're sloshing around with all of this. A trillion is a genuinely astonishingly large number. If you were to think of it in terms of stacked $1 dollar bills, a trillion will get you to the moon and back 203 times. So it's it's quite substantial. Or if you turn it in terms of seconds, a million seconds is about 12 days. A billion seconds is almost 32 years, whereas a trillion seconds is 32,000 years. It is a staggeringly large number. And you might think to yourself, okay, well, yeah, but there's a lot of Americans. So when you break down these big numbers by the number of Americans, it becomes a bit more manageable. And yes, there are, you know, what it is, 336 million Americans, which is fine. But when you start to interrogate that figure, you start to think, well, okay, but 600,000 of them are homeless. So they're presumably not going to be paying an awful lot of tax. 122,000 a year die in drugs overdoses. So, yeah, they're not going to be paying much tax either. 27 million of them can't even afford insurance, medical insurance and other insurances. So, you know, they might be paying some tax, but obviously their means are very limited. 43 million are living in poverty. I know the definition poverty keeps getting notched up and so on, but, you know, nevertheless, you know, if you're living in poverty, you're not going to be paying much by taxes. 59 million are retired. So, yeah, they can still pay taxes, certainly, but their prime tax-paying days are very much behind them at that stage. 8.4 million are disabled, some of which will be earning, but their earnings capacity is most likely to be affected by that. So those are some issues. So you've got to consider just the workforce. The workforce is about 161 million, of which 129 million are taxpayers, because of course you can be earning, but at such a de minimis rate that it doesn't push you into even fairly low tax bands. So you've got 129 million, which you really got to divide these numbers by, but 24 million of them work for the government in some capacity, be it military or, you know, police or school workers or, you know, all the federal state and municipal workers. So, you know, you've got to sub out those 24 million. So what you're left with at the end of all of this is about 105 million people in the US that you can extract its wealth from. And if you want to be even more idealistic about it, you know, somebody like a Bernie Sanders, you would say, oh, you want to just tax the millionaires and the billionaires. Well, there are 23 million of them, 23 million Americans who are US dollar millionaires. So if you take that 7.3 trillion spending commitment per year that Biden wants to do, you're looking at 70 grand per taxpayer for the cost of government. The cost of government is 70 grand per taxpayer. Now, that is obviously a substantial sum of money. And if you think to yourself, well, okay, you know, we only really need to do the Bernie Sanders route of making the millionaires and the billionaires pay, even if you shrink it down to that level, the taxes are now about $320,000 a year. Yes, there are some people who are very wealthy who could afford to pay, well, and do afford to pay large amounts of taxation. But the thing you have to remember with the wealth distribution is a lot of that is a long tail. So I remember looking at the Times Rich List for the UK, and you know, you start off with some very, very wealthy people, the billionaires at the beginning, but the level of wealth trails off very precipitously. And once you get into the Times 250 rich list, not just the 100, you know, the scale, I mean, they're still very, very wealthy people, but the scale of the wealth is trailing off. And actually, of those 23 million US dollar millionaires, you'll find that the long tail comprises the vast, vast majority of that. And it'll be people who have just over a million or a couple of million. A lot of that will be tied up in capital like stocks or homes or other assets, or personal level assets. So if you start even putting the tax burden primarily on those people, you know, a lot of them aren't, well, it depends. There was a time when you would have said somebody who was a millionaire was rich. I don't know if you can necessarily still make that claim, even if for the people who are just literally, you know, over a million or 1 or 2 million. I don't even necessarily call them rich. But there are certainly people who have the means to move if they so wish. So if you start going after them aggressively, you know, you're going to see the already high number of people who are giving up their US citizenship increase even more, and they're just going to find somewhere else to stay. So, of course, they can't actually fund this level of government through taxation. It's just not feasible. So instead, they are, of course, going to have to do it through, again, more debt, more deficit, you know, basically the... let's not beat around the bush. This money is just going to be printed into existence in one form or another. It's worth touching on what's happened to spending, though, because it is the spending is the problem. So let's take the big line items. The big line items are things like Social Security. You look at the way that has risen. So let's get some data points. 2005, 2015, and 2025. So we're taking 10-year slices in this. Social Security used to be about $500 million in 2005. Then by 2015, that had jumped to 0.9, trillion. And by 2025, you're going to be looking at about 1.5 trillion. So a substantial cut of that overall budget is going in Social Security. The story of Medicare and Medicaid is basically the same thing. So it was $500 billion, jumped up to 0.9 trillion, is going to jump to about 1.5 trillion. So those two items alone, and they're just straight up redistribution of wealth from people who have more to people who have less, or people who have money printers to people who don't have much but need to vote Democrat. So, you know, those are two massive, and those are the two big chunks, which comes on a bit later. We'll be talking about, you know, what's the practicality of cutting any of this? Incredibly difficult, because are you going to take away the sort of entitlement programs from people when they come to rely on it, and they most certainly rely on it in order to not vote against you? The next big line item I should mention is defence. Started off, what about 400 billion, jumped to 600 billion in 2015, and we're now at on the budget anyway of about 0.9 trillion, so 900 billion. Those numbers are certainly disputed, because there's other spending that you could get in there. RFK makes the point that he thinks the total military spending is sort of north of 1.4 trillion. Point is, it's a large number. The other thing that you need to highlight with this, which used to be a fairly negligible line item on the budget, was the interest on the debt. So going back to 2005, you're looking at 178 billion to service the debt that the US had. So 178 billion is not to be sniffed at, but it's perfectly manageable for an economy such as the United States. By 2015, that had jumped to 250 billion. So again, you know, no small sum, but perfectly manageable for a country the size of the US. It's now very almost a trillion. It has massively leaped. I mean, that's driven partly because of the rapid build up in debt that we've had more recently, and partly because interest rates have gone up, because of course they printed so much money that they created so much inflation that in order to stop the US dollar turning into toilet paper, they had to put the interest rates up to attract more, to stem the flows out of it. So and we will look later in this program about how the growth of that is only going to rip from here. And then, of course, the deficit, which I talked about, you know, that was, what was that? That was about 350 billion back in 2005. So, you're accumulating a bit of debt, but it's not wild. It's the sort of stage where you can turn that around with a couple of, you know, moderately painful decisions, but nothing too harsh. By 2015, it had broken through, was on its way to 600 billion. And as we've now covered, it's now going to be 1.8 trillion. Just, you know, astonishing levels of spending. So spending is out of control. They've decided they're going to try, and they don't want to touch any of that. So they've decided they want to do it through taxation. And Biden is saying, at least, that he wants to go after the wealthiest. The problem is that that basically just doesn't work. There are loads of studies that demonstrate that as you try and tax an economy, more than about 20% of GDP, you end up with the growth in that economy basically tipping over, going negative. So you actually end up destroying the value in the economy rather than raising more. So studies like this one from the Manhattan Institute, The Limits of Taxing the Rich, I mean, it's in the show notes, so do go and have a peruse through that if you'd like to. But short story is it doesn't work. And I'll show you some charts later on that demonstrate that as well. The spending goes up, then the need for the taxation increases. You push up the taxes. It's already near the threshold of what can be achieved in terms of taxation. So the taxes go up, the take goes down because the growth in the economy turns negative. Government spending then goes up by even more to make up the gap, leading to higher deficits, which then lead to higher interest expenses, which then lead to bigger deficits, which then needs the further demand on increasing taxation, which is the point we're at now, which is, as we've been speaking about on this show for over a year now, is the coming debt spiral. Or you could very reasonably claim that we are in that debt spiral now. It's just a question of how fast that starts to spin up. So let's get into some interesting charts that I think makes this point well. So this is a Fred chart. So this is financial receipts as a percentage of gross domestic product. As you can see there, this is the point that I was making a few moments ago from the study, but it's just easier to, rather than go through that, it is easier just to show you very visually. This goes back to, where does it go back? So this goes back to the 1930s. So what have you got? You've got an 80-year data set here. And over that period, there have been a myriad of different tax regimes, different approaches, a whole bunch of different ways that government bureaucrats and politicians have sought to extract wealth from the population. They've tried everything from being very laissez-faire to 90% marginal tax rates on the richest. Everything's been tried over this 90-year period. And as you can quite clearly see, you don't get over 20%. You know, that seems to be a hard barrier. And it goes back to what I was talking about before, is that incentives change when taxation goes up too far. If the tax obligation is too high, you know, you're trade income for leisure, or you might calculate that the risk reward return on not disclosing all of your income or doing it in a different way is sufficiently worth it to you that you'll not disclose income, or you'll find a way around it. So, I mean, however it ends up being there, you can't argue with a 90-year data set like this that clearly demonstrates that you're not getting above 20% of tax, no matter how much you want to, no matter how willing you are to punish the wealthy, you're not getting above that level. I mean, the logical conclusion from looking at a chart like this would be, okay, well, if tax take can't get above 20%, why do we ever let spending get above 20% of GDP? You know, we should just hard code this in. It could almost be a constitutional amendment that, you know, the government can't spend more than 20% of GDP, because you're just not going to get above that level of taxation, and that's entirely clear from here. So let's have a look at the next one. Yeah, so this is how much the government is spending as a percentage of GDP. So basically the same thing, but the other side from the spending point of view. And as you can see here, let's have a look. So that line across there is the 20% line. It was comfortably below it in the pre-war period, as it should be. During the war, it spiked up to, you know, a massive 40%. But I mean, fair enough, there was a war on. came back down below, and then you sort of then consistently sit below that 20% quite sensibly because they were not running massive deficits there. And as you get into more modern eras, especially after 2008 and the GFC, spending now sits proudly above that 20% line, goes up to 24% in 2009, and basically then stays there. It then doesn't cross that 20% line again. COVID, another remarkable own goal for Western economies. Spending as a percentage of GDP then goes to 30%, and it's come off a bit, but again, we show no indication of going below that 20% bound, which is the actual realistic rate that an economy could support. And while we're on charts, I think we'll also have a look at this one. So this is all employees of government. And you can see where the money's going. So what is this here? This one goes back to the 1940s. So you've got an 80-year data set on this one. You can expect a spike in the sort of post-war period, but then, you know, it sort of levels out where it's about 5-odd million people were working for the government. And just every year it goes on this pretty much straight line up until you've now got, as I alluded to earlier, something like 24 million people working for the government in some shape or form. So you're getting increased dependency on government jobs. The other thing to bear in mind with this, of course, is that even if you're not necessarily working for the government, you might very well be working for a private sector firm for whom the government might be your only customer. Well, it could at least be one of your major customers. So to what degree can it be said that the employees are limited to 24 million? And that might actually, in all practical terms, it might be significantly higher than that. So, I don't know what that number is, but the point is that the state has become this giant sucking leech, consuming the lifeblood of everything within its boundaries. So where I'm going with all of this is that, as we talked about many times, economic gravity is going to have to reassert itself. You know, we've discussed that lots. We've broken into why that is. But I just thought this budget was such a good case study on, everything that we've talked about in action. You know, this continues to be the case now. It's continuing to happen. This party is going to stop sooner or later. It really already is through slower growth and higher inflation. Everybody is getting squeezed. Most people are then getting pretty pissed off with their employers for not matching their salaries to inflation levels. It's probably not your employer that's the problem. It's probably the state and it's stealing. The government is very effective at stealing, especially when it can steal the money literally out of your wallet by printing money elsewhere and devaluing the money that is in your wallet. I mean, as thefts go, that's pretty smart.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.